everyone, and welcome to another episode of Art and Labor. We are the podcast dedicated to the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I am OK Fox.
I'm Lucia Love.
And we're joined by a special guest. Yeah. Are you going to do it? You do it.
We are joined by a very special guest.
Joe Hartzler is in studio or not. Oh my God. We are so not in studio. We've been remote for like 6 months.
The studio is a state of mind.
I was going to go with that.
Yeah. Hey guys, do you want some more coffee?
Yeah.
Glug, 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 glug.
Do you remember when we used to have people and like get bagels and like,
yeah.
God damn.
We did get bagels.
Our quality of life has just dipped and it sucks.
Before times.
Yeah, people do say that, the before times. What do you guys think of that term?
All it just reminds me of the Rick and Morty joke when they do the spoof on, like, you know, Thunderdome or whatever, and there's a guy who wears a pail on his head and he talks about the before four times.
Wow, so maybe that is what it's from.
I have never seen Rick and Morty.
Wow.
I've never seen a single episode. I'm sorry. I'm a bad comedian, though.
No, I feel like it's very divisive, especially to LA people. Like, LA people are like, we don't touch.
It's interesting. A lot of people I respect, though, do like it. And, you know, I think Dan Harmon's a pretty funny guy, but some people, I don't know everything. I shouldn't even say anything because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble.
I'm a painter, so I'm allowed to say whatever I want because it's just entertainment to me. But
it's
think
just
that
entertainment
like
for us, yeah.
I'm in it for Justin Roiland because he's like such an, I don't know, he's crazy. It's great.
He's a whack. Okay. And that's fun for a lot of folks. And we have a very like kind of back and forth debate about Rick and Morty on this show, but that's not what today's show is about.
Okay.
Show.
This is my pet project. I try to drag every episode into becoming
legit.
I'm like, Joe, oh, it's like
for real. This is like an ongoing segment of the show where we debate the merits of Rick and Morty. But
I was excited to do this show because you have one of the better names of a show.
Well, it is it's very straightforward, I feel like it's more because there is like the famous William Morris essay on art and labor, but I feel like we can go either way. We can get kind of academic, especially Lucia.
Oh yeah,
get more academic, and then I don't know.
I was just gonna nerd out too. There's actually a Dave Beach book that just came out called Art and Labor, and I'm trying to get a press copy from him now.
Get that. Somebody, come on.
Yeah, if anybody has a copy, we would love to review the book. And I will do all the heavy lifting there. I didn't mean to sign you up, okay?
Oh no, it's totally cool. I'm like I like doing assignments. I like being like told what to read and what to do, but I get very
comrade.
I just pulled up the William Morris essay and I will read this.
You will like it, Joe. I think it's like
I also read it on our pod if you want to listen to it, actually.
Oh, cool. Oh, even better. I hate reading, you know, let's be honest.
Audiobooks are like some people are audio learners and visual learners, and like you know, that's why we do like reading episodes sometimes where we'll just like straight up read the text.
Yeah, I do read though. That was a joke, but I'm not gonna hate on the audio book. It's wonderful. You ever done a road trip? You gotta have an audio book.
It's true.
Stop by the Cracker Barrel, you can rent them.
Yeah, we do a little commentary in there too. So, you know, in case you get bored of just hearing what the writer wanted you to know, we also give opinions.
Yeah, it's like reactions. Like, I mean, that's like a whole genre on YouTube is like live reactions and stuff.
Can I tell you something funny that I did recently? I was invited to be on the great podcast Struggle Session.
Yay. Oh, amazing.
I know. And we were going to talk about the Big Lebowski. We were going to, and they said, Leslie emailed or texted me and he said, or messaged me and he said, do you want to do commentary on Big Lebowski? And I was like, great. And so I woke up in the morning and I went out and I got a DVD from my roommate and I was like, yes, we have it. I put it on. I watched Big Lebowski all morning. The credits are rolling and I get a message from Leslie and it's like, here's the link to the movie. And I realized, oh, we were all supposed to watch it together.
Together.
Oh, no.
And I just finished watching it. It's a long movie. And I immediately responded with, like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Oh, shit. I can't sit and watch that movie again right away.
But that would have been a really interesting perspective, I think. Like,
yeah, but I already done. I had other things I wanted to do.
Right, you have things today. You have things to do. Like,
yeah. What about like just a 6-hour block of Jeff Bridges going? That's not cool, man.
Right. It wasn't. It was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a 2-hour podcast, but you thought it was going to be like a half an hour or hour.
I like thought we were going to talk about the Big Lebowski. I was writing down notes and insights.
Fuck.
Relay one of the interesting notes because it came from my roommate. He observed during the scene when he gets arrested by the sheriff of Malibu.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is get the hell out of my beachside community or whatever. He's like, get the hell out of Malibu. He, as he's coming to, he's still drugged from Jackie Treehorn. Spoiler if you haven't seen The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, and there's a lady, and she's on a trampoline.
He asks for a... Oh, yeah, that's right. He asks for a lawyer, and the lawyer he asked for is a famous leftist attorney who represented the Chicago Seven, who were charged with inciting a riot.
Wow.
By the federal government.
Far out.
Yeah, I love scooping that from Struggle Session. That's what they get for misscheduling you.
So that's what you didn't get. But you throw it out there like as a joke. Who's your attorney? Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Well, okay, so we invited Joe on today to talk about the SAG stuff, which is now like hit the press. Like I saw the New York Times did a piece about it yesterday, and there's a big petition going around. Basically, what's going on is SAG is basically cutting off the eligibility hours for the health insurance. Can you explain that a bit more to our listeners, Joe?
Yeah, so it's a complicated thing, but I did attend a webinar. And
webinar seemed crazy. But
I did read a newsletter, and everyone telling you about that will act like the problem right now is that people haven't read the newsletter. I think people have read the newsletter,
and
they're experiencing what people think about the newsletter. And I also think they're experiencing the backlash of the last decade,
right?
Because what happened with the health insurance is the plan is out of money, and it had been running out of money before the pandemic. Like there were problems, but what people are upset about is they feel that this information was obscured or downplayed severely before we just passed last year, I think was a commercial contract that passed, which I voted no for. And this year was the theatrical contract that passed, which I voted no for. They have not been seriously fighting for members, in my opinion. And they've just been giving everything to the producers and passing things off. We haven't had a strike in 20 years. And now it's all come home. There's a pandemic. The health plan is out of money. And so they've raised eligibility by almost $10,000. Just a couple years ago, the minimum to earn health care, you had to make like $14,000.
God.
Which doesn't sound like much. And it's like, oh, this is union. Because a lot of unions, you know, you have to make a lot. But it's very hard. People don't understand. It's very hard for actors to actually make money unless you're like on a TV show.
Right.
So there's a lot of us in the industry who like just barely get by. And some years we do good and some years we don't do good at all. And so we have side gigs and we teach improv or whatever.
But those don't count as eligibility, of course. That's just all like a second income
source.
That's
your second income so that you can do commercials or be in a Super Bowl commercial. And people back home will think, oh, you were in a Super Bowl commercial. You must be a millionaire. And the truth is, it doesn't pay that much, folks. It ran one time on TV. You know, I mean, that's like, it's a good chunk of money, but that's not my year. I have to keep working. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So they raised it up to now it's like $25,950 is the requirement. And they've gotten rid of two plans. Now there's just one plan. And so
it's just awful. It just feels like such a betrayal to the membership, because the whole thing with selling the SAG after merger to begin with was to be like, hey, we're going to do this to bolster our union power, to bolster our strike fund, to do all this stuff.
Yeah. And then they did nothing. Right.
Right. Well, I love the, like, looking actually at this newsletter, which, you know, it says like, hey, you know, really sorry about all of this, these changes that are going to be coming up for your health coverage, but check it out, guys. You can go on Obamacare, right, or you can do COBRA coverage.
Right.
Psycho shit.
Which is just like, it's just like, sorry, not sorry. Why don't you just go to the federal level? Just, you know, complain to the president who wants to also cut Obamacare.
The president who is like literally sending people into an incinerator during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And they keep assuring us, yeah, just use the exchange. And it's like, first of all, the people I know on Obamacare are paying $600 a month or more. Families, it can be very, very expensive. And second of all, look what's happening politically. Like, can we really count on Obamacare? Like one of the members was like, oh, I was an over 65 guy was like, I managed to get on the exchange and find a plan. And I'm like, great. So as long as nothing changes politically between now and when I'm 65, it'd be all good. So I'm really frustrated. It's kicking off 3,000 members, but that's not counting the people who don't even qualify for it yet. And what I'm saying is you've got an industry that is running on people who are on the bottom, and it's only feeding the people at the top. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and the union has no teeth if it's allowing for companies like Quibi or like whatever to come in and skirt union dues and do these projects that are completely disrupting, quote unquote, the industry. Right. All that means is screwing over union labor and making less union work.
And meanwhile, it's like, also, isn't it like Gabrielle Carteris is the president still? Yeah. And she's getting like $750,000 a year just to just to like go and talk about Me Too in like panel conversations.
Yeah, I got to check. I'm not sure which people are making what, but yeah, there's a few people who make a bunch of money. I'm not sure if it's Gabrielle Carteris or what, because to be honest, I'm a very bad union member. But here's another way I've been describing this for a while. I've been hating on SAG for a long time. Everybody else was just like, oh, this Joe's mad again. But
you were right about UCB too. I'm just going to say that.
I think I might've been onto something. I think a lot of people, anyways. Oh, I just watched a great documentary about multi-level marketing on Netflix. And I'm not saying that's what that was, but I'm just saying like,
I'm snapping for you.
I can relate to a lot of things about it. But here's how the best way I can describe it. When in 2008, when I booked my first commercial job, when we booked it, we got paid a great sum of money for the TV commercial. And then we got paid for these internet spots. The internet was pretty new. And we got paid $5,000 per spot.
Wow.
And we did like five of them. So I made like just on internet, I made like $25,000 or $30,000. That was pretty good. And it was also, we did a lot of improv. And so they kind of, you know, that was like a specialty thing that got more money. Cut to 2020, the price for a new media SAG job is like half of that.
Yeah. So wages are actually like going down significantly for the rank and file or for the they don't want more members to qualify.
It's like, look, and I'm probably screwing up numbers. I hate saying numbers because I'm probably getting something wrong. Someone's going to be like, he's lying. He's getting it wrong. If I'm mistaken, please correct me. I'm sorry. But I think it's like 27 something all in before taxes and before you pay your agent and you get taxed on the whole. Anyway, it's just there's all these ways that the little actors get screwed, but they're used to make TV shows and movies, which are the only purpose of those things is to sell commercials.
Right.
Anyway.
So Joe, what do you think like rank and file members should be doing right now? Have you guys thought about like making a caucus to try to, I don't know, counteract leadership.
Well, right now there's a petition going, right?
The petition too, yeah.
See, now we're getting into territory of stuff that I find real annoying. You know,
yeah.
This is a problem with me, with people like me, is I'm real good at being angry and identifying the problem.
No, but I don't want to spend
my time on a panel, on a caucus, for petitioning for a, you know, I'm bad at
it. It's a lot of free labor to do that
I think, like, one thing that's really kind of interesting about SAG-AFTRA is, like, its history of strikes, right? Because they had, like, Global Rule 1 strike, and, like, they had, like, the video game voice actor strike in 2017 or whatever, where it was, like, you know, hey, all of these people are having to do, like, you know, voice acting for, you know, video games that are like 60 hours long in some parts, where they're getting totally underpaid and they're getting used to shit and they're getting like injuries from like vocal stress and stuff. Can we actually like make it so that these people are protected? And I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, their history of being able to strike should, in my mind, be like put to use in a moment like this, where it's like, oh, all of these pandemic cuts are happening, where we don't want to pay for healthcare at the moment that everyone's going to need it the most. And like, well, you know, okay, so fair, it's a little harder to talk strike when the industry is shut down and there's not so much need, so you don't have that leverage.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, maybe there is something that everyone can do to go like, this isn't the direction we want our organization going in.
Yeah. I guess there was a town hall that was better. There was a webinar, and during the webinar, it was just SAG leadership absolving themselves of the responsibility, of course, and acting like, you know, we should have just known this was going to happen, and acting like there's nothing they can do. But they promised to take questions. They didn't take any members' questions directly. They didn't put any members on screen. They didn't put any members' comments or questions on screen directly. They would paraphrase back questions they were getting. You know what I'm saying? It's like all this effort to, like, in my mind, you're trying to squash the discussion of membership, which is anti-union.
Anyway. Damn.
So apparently there was a town hall. What I suspect will happen, and I don't know if this is a good idea because I'm theoretically a big union guy, but what do you do when your union's not working for you?
Totally. That's back to like the, what do you do? Do like, is now the time to like invest some time, like some work into building a more like radical caucus that,
you know, I expect I will do? Buy a piece of junk house and flip it with carpentry and work, and I will probably look back fondly on my time in Hollywood as a really fun time I had.
Oh my god, dude, this is actually just the plot of Spalding Gray's Terrors of Pleasure.
Spalding Gray, man.
Yeah, you're actually just Spalding Gray, and you're gonna get a house upstate, and there's gonna be like a raccoon living in it, and you're gonna be like, oh my god, my landlord's crazy.
Oh, that would be really good for me. That would honestly, that's kind of what I'm thinking at this point. I don't see an easy fix for SAG, and I don't know what will happen.
None of the fixes are easy. That's the thing.
I don't think we should have ever let it in after. I think that may have been a bad, maybe it was a bad decision. I just think leadership has not, and the response to this, to me, is the masks are off and leadership is showing you who they are. There's somebody who just blocked me this morning on Twitter because I was trying to write, thank you very much for helping, and I sneezed and I wrote, you fucking loser. And I got blocked, but this guy, you know, people are saying like childish things like posting Mr. Rogers and a puppet, and it's like, thank you for the helpers, the people who, you know, and it's just like,
oh my god,
the most condescending stuff. That guy is not losing insurance.
Of course not. And I think like there is something to be said of like, there's no longer like any like competition within the unions to like challenge each other. And now that there's just one game in town, and that's never good. And it's also like, because like a critique of like SAG that we've had on this show before is that because of all these other creative industries being completely deregulated, like it's like really, yeah, it's really easy for the Silicon Valley psychos to just take advantage of labor and completely undercut it. And then if you don't have like a militant union being like, no, we're not, no, like this isn't, or like fighting that or striking about that or doing anything about that, then it's, yeah, then it's all just going to collapse.
Which, look at the nature of actors that you know, and look at the nature of the business. We have to say yes to everything. We're people pleasers. We don't want to stick our heads out and sneeze and say something bad on the Twitter website, you know. But the point is, we try to like go along with stuff. We like try to, you know, we're trying to get jobs. It's so competitive. It's hard for us to be a militant, organized labor force when we're all like, an opportunity, yay, anything to ever get myself on screen. Anyway,
no, that's true. That's like, that's why a lot of like this this type of organizing around creative fields like falls apart.
Isn't it also the way that the union is funded is like there's 80% or something of the money collected comes from employers.
There's no union dues, or?
Or no, there is dues, but it's only a percentage, and there's some kind of thing that it's like the money collected. I don't know. I think
there's more stuff I should know and don't. One of the things about the dues is people making under $500,000 a year pay a percentage of what they make, and people who make over $500,000 a year pay a flat rate.
Flat rate. Okay.
So that's good for, right. That's helped them.
I think the employer-employee thing might also just be in specifically in terms of the like the slush fund they have for healthcare.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But that is fucked up that like they flat rate.
Oh yeah.
For the higher earning, like the multi-million dollar actors, like think about people who like the Tom Cruises and the Rocks or whatever, who get like $30 million to do one movie.
And meanwhile, there are SAG-AFTRA members who buy the plane ticket, fly themselves across the country, rent a hotel themselves, just to be in that same movie, and they're paying members of SAG-AFTRA too.
Yeah,
they work as a local hire is what it's called, but then you have to pay for your own travel and you have to pay for your own lodging.
Yeah, I think the rank and file should be fucking pissed. I think you're right to be pissed, and like, and it's not, you know, it's just, it's not fucking right. And like,
okay, let me give another example of what's going on in SAG. So like, there's little things like, it used to be that if they asked us to improvise in an audition, we had to be paid as creatives.
Because you're like contributing to a different process.
But then when improv became ubiquitous and every single agent and every actor, you know, everybody told everyone to go to these improv schools, and then everyone got labeled as a quote improviser when there's, you know, not, you know, just everybody was like trying it. Then it got like annoying to see probably the people trying it poorly. And but anyway, they took away that, they got rid of that creative fee for improv, which was like, I used to get a bump when I would negotiate because I was like an improv guy. All my commercials were improv. Here's another thing. There used to be SAG representatives that would show up on set and in the early days when I was in SAG, there was always a SAG rep on set, and the production hated them, but they were there and, you know, just to oversee stuff. They were the bad guy. They were the bad cop, right? You need someone there. You have to have someone, because when that person is not there, every single time you get taken advantage of in ways that it's hard to voice because you're on set as the actor.
Right. It's not. Yeah. I mean, who is going to, nobody's really enforcing any of these safety standards and like, and especially because of the like ubiquity of the technology, like it's so much different that every single person has a camera. And I like, I get they're, they can't like, it's like there's just probably more production now for just, I guess, yes, there is because of YouTube and shit like that. But
right.
Well, I don't know how they could do that anymore. It's just fucking.
I'm just gonna pool some dues together, and then I'm gonna hire a gunman.
Nope. I'm out.
Just train it on like safety violence.
Here's another example. It used to be, productions almost always had stand-ins. You'd have a stand-in for like the, you know, you'd have like A team and B team. And this is still happens to some extent, but it really started getting squeezed so that now no commercial job would ever have a stand-in. And so the actor ends up being the stand-in, which what the stand-in does is they stand on the mark so that the lighting people can light the scene. Now, sometimes they'll just use a lighting person in place, but what can happen is you find yourself as an actor never having an opportunity to step off set to use the restroom.
Oh, God.
And so it will come to the end of the day and you'll realize you've not had a drink of water. You have not used the restroom. You've been standing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because they're just taking it, they're having you do multiple jobs. Like it's
you're busy. No one realizes quite. You know, even you yourself, you're busy. You don't quite think, but that's, you can't sustain that. And then how do you go to that audition the next day? You can't. You're exhausted. You have to recover for a week.
It's the type of consolidation we're seeing across industries and why, and just another reason why I think we will continue to see the collapse of like the middle class in the United States. Like the income inequalities are just going to keep being a chasm, you know.
I just really felt like a real loser being like, one day of work, I have to rest for a week.
No, that's true.
But I mean, there's another issue though with entertainment, which is sort of like the way that online production has meant that there's such a kind of a glut of content as well.
Oh yeah.
It's just to the point where there's just so much being accepted on these platforms that we're not going to have like a shortage if somebody does strike. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, at a certain point, people are going to be participating in these industries simply because they want the punishment. There's just going to be this like masochistic sort of like, kind of like, well, what if you can't hack it? Like you just have to do these sort of like inconceivable days and then go back to your waiting job.
Or what if you are the child of the affluent and for you, acting is a fun side hobby.
Joe, that sounds like you're talking about the fine art industry.
Wow. And so when you get do a TV gig or get a paying role on TV, it's just a fun thing for you to talk about at your parties. Meanwhile, you know, a lot of your other paying members are like working many jobs and constantly wondering what they're going to do next.
Oh, yeah. But I feel like this is sort of the thing that really enables like the studio system to atrophy, where at a certain point you reach that level where maybe there are only Little Lord Fauntleroys working. You know what I mean? Sure. And then who is going to pay to watch those movies? Probably just their friends, and it's going to become this sort of like really insular thing, which can't happen with movies in the same way. You know, you can do that in the art world because it's like, oh my god, my kid painted this painting, put it in your house. And then they're like, sure, whatever. It can go in the closet, worst case scenario. But with a movie, you have to let people in. So at a certain point, they're going to hit a major crisis in the industry if they don't realize that, like, making a sustainable opportunity for working class actors and other, like, industry professionals is going to be the thing that keeps this whole entire industry afloat.
Yeah.
Which suffering.
Yeah. Can I posit a question about late night comedy and like network TV stuff. Okay. So that type of thing, I have this theory that they are like vastly inflating those numbers.
I have not watched. When's the last time you watched late night comedy?
People don't watch it anymore.
No, it's not a thing. That's just they're pretending a thing is still happening, and it's like their audience is going to drop off the earth from old age. You know, it's like TV is becoming irrelevant, and this is the thing we should have been preparing for the last 10 years towards making the internet television. Yeah. It's the same thing. You know, it's the same thing with like our you know, why telephones were like a program, you know. It was like we installed telecommunications. Why don't we do the same thing with the internet? And it should all be whatever.
Because we didn't do it right to begin with.
You know, there should be a public works to install like fast fiber internet in every area of the whole country. That's where
whoa. This is tipping into some 5G conspiracy stuff. I don't know about this world takeover.
Yeah, it's just to me, we're being squeezed in every aspect of society to squeeze out more productivity for less, you know, for less money. And that's just what's happening in every aspect of society.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we're seeing like a dip in that, like in actually a quality of like the entertainment that gets an actual budget. You know what I mean? That's all I was trying to say about like the type of stuff on network TV now is it's even like the content itself is becoming like homogenized and just boring.
But it's coming at such a weird time where people are also thoroughly entertained by like unboxing videos.
Yeah.
So like what does quality even mean at this stage?
Right. You know,
totally.
It's interesting because it's a boon, you know, I watch the internet all day long. So to me it's like, well, as a creator, I mean, people are just going to go to the internet and make content, but now the next fight is going to be, it's all owned by YouTube or Amazon. Like I stream on Twitch, you know, and now they can just again exploit that labor source, the individual YouTube creators. You know, anytime you're negotiating directly as a worker with the boss, you're losing.
I mean, yeah, they've completely abstracted any possibility of that prospect on like a Twitch or YouTube. One of our really early episodes is about like this woman who did a shooting on the YouTube offices
because of
the monetization algorithm of YouTube and ruined her channel, and then she did this shooting, and it's like so it's a really nuts story, but it's like this is like an ongoing issue for these small creators. They like are like it's not from a lack of like wanting to earn a living doing this stuff. It's right. Just there's no that they've abstracted the process of figuring out how to demand more so much that I don't think they can. But I do want to go back to your Twitch show is really good, and
thank you.
I wanted to talk about it before you leave. Fartzler.
Yeah, maybe I have the terrible. Maybe it's a bad name.
And it's called Live at 5, and the theme song kicks ass. It's like a kind of Guided by Voices vibe theme song, and I always get it stuck in my head.
Yeah, my friend Jared Rivulet from Ohio. He's a great artist.
So people check that out every weekday at 5 Pacific time.
Yeah, we'll be back. I think I'm starting back tomorrow, maybe. Twitch.tv/fartslur. I just took a week off, and then I'll be back every day. And I'm going to be trying to grow that. I mean, that's really where I'm turning to, is trying to see if I can, you know, just do it on the internet. We'll see. It's exciting times.
Yeah, I mean, it is a weird time, but yeah, we're all trying to pool money together and support each other, these different art scenes, and yeah. To a certain extent, people are figuring it out. Like the big battle, of course, is rent and trying to just get everyone's cost of living down as much as possible, I think. But
yeah. Yeah.
But it was lovely talking to you. Thanks so much for talking to us, Joe.
Listen, I'm probably wrong about everything. So if I said all the wrong things, then
there's
just,
no like wrong oh, no. thing.
Look, we also have incredibly supportive listeners who they like us for the chemistry, not for the factual veracity, you know?
Yeah, okay. we're not putting in like the fucking heavy lifting doing all our research on our end either. Like, come on.
You both knew more about SAG than I did, but hey, Medicare for all. Let's keep fighting. Decriminalize marijuana, free Palestine. I don't know what else.
rent stabilization, that's the big one.
Yeah.
Dude, think about the whales.
Just all of them. Throw it all. Yes, I mean, now's the time. General strike, what? Why not?
Yeah, dude.
General strike, what are we waiting for? I think it's already starting. I think it's already happened.
It has to, at a certain extent, with the amount of unemployment, you know?
Yeah,
we'll see. Organize around the unemployed. Unemployment union, counter union to all these failed bourgeois unions. Let's go.
Caucus. Start a petition.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Everyone, you know what? Chaos. Chaos reigns.
It's chaos right now. But it was really lovely talking to you and getting the perspective. Thanks so much for coming on.
Likewise. Thank you so much. This was fun.
That was really nice.
That was great. That
was lovely.
I love the whole package.
He's really funny too.
This is what we do now. This is our new format for guests. We have them on and then we're like, okay, get out. We're gonna give you our Yelp review.
Yeah. I just figured like we're just gonna talk about our own little projects now, so
but we also want you to know that we enjoy
love you.
We enjoy you, Joe.
We love you.
We love you. We enjoy you. We want the best for you.
Just like real radio having segments. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, we're real. This is not in your head, guys. If you're listening to this, this is really happening.
Yes, we have been doing this show for 2 years. And yes, everything that we talk about has been very relevant.
And also that's a great time to mention we have a Patreon and we have been working for 2 years bringing you loosey-goosey content about the industries you love. We've also been bringing you
just that perfect mix of funny, like silliness and like seriousness and anger about the situation
and history
and history
and also theory. Sometimes we do personality tests.
Yes. just a political variety show or some shit, like but we do have a Patreon.
We're giving it.
We're giving it. We have, you know, like we I don't know. I think we do a really good job with this show. Like everything that we're up against, like everything that we've been able to survive through every day, like has been like really helpful to have this extra income every month. And I really appreciate it. I put up my newest zine digitally on the Patreon last week.
There you go. You're getting quality and digital art.
As soon as the fucking press makes the copies, I just gotta stay on their ass, I think, because they keep being like, I'll print it, and then they don't.
Oh yeah, you gotta crack the whip.
I know. I just gotta crack the whip and get them, and then I will fucking mail them to people, and I'll mail people a bunch of fucking shit that I've been wanting to mail everybody.
I stopped promising that I will mail anybody anything.
It's my fault, and I promise I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna say, if you would like to subscribe to our Patreon, you know, there's things that we do have that are definitely available, which is we run two different Discords with different functions. And you can have access to them. So yes, if you join our Patreon, we can guarantee that you can hang out in the Art and Labor Discord with a whole bunch of cool listeners who want to, like, you know, exchange all that info to get the revolution started.
We also do bonus episodes, like, probably like once or twice a month.
Yeah, we do bonus episodes. You can check them out. We got a Discord, you can hang. And we also have Constructing the Real, which is a school that we are building. If you would like to participate in that school, you can also just write to artandlaborpodcast@gmail.com, because we finished a text that just took us 3 months to get through, but we have all the recordings. We have all the notes, and you can just check that out because it's all there for you. All the learning done, been did. We also have meetings coming up tomorrow, which is Monday the 17th, where we're going to be discussing the direction of our courses and expanding our courses. And if you would like to teach something, or if you would like to check out what we are learning, you should join us.
Check out the Constructing the Real offerings.
Yeah, yeah. Or bring some to the table. We just had our first guest. So Karina Kirch, she is an art historian who...
That's not your first guest. You had another guest, didn't you?
Oh, no. She actually had to reschedule.
Oh, okay.
But she was our first guest. She gave a talk about Les Levine. It slapped. It's also recorded for you, and you can come to the school and you can check it out because it's all atemporal. Mm. Yeah, so there's that. And that is a guaranteed thing. I might not be able to mail you anything, but I can, you know, conduct school.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing what we can, you know. You know, now that I'm like really definitely unemployed, this is the time I'm trying to take to get my printing and shipping game stepped up. Yesterday I printed a couple banners for an action that my tenants union, Ridgewood Tenants Union, did. So basically what happened was we organized this march in solidarity with our like houseless neighbors and like in and to demand like a cancellation of rent. The eviction moratorium was supposed to expire, and because of like the actions of a lot of advocacy groups and unions, they pushed it back to October, which is almost pushing it back to the range of the winter, where in New York City anyway, you can't get evicted in the winter. But of course, that's not true everywhere. Right. And it's not nearly enough. And the eviction moratorium is not nearly enough. But so we did this march, and we noticed on our march route over this property called AB Capstone. It's a development that has been just completely like demolishing like a whole entire block near Myrtle Wyckoff. And our union has been trying to speak with these developers since 2015. We've had an antagonistic relationship with them because they're literally promising like the most, like picture like the most exorbitant luxury type development? What do you picture, Lucia?
Oh, gosh. I think that there's going to be a soft serve machine in every loft.
Basically that. They're, like, talking about, like, indoor golf. They're talking about an indoor pool and, like...
Everything indoors. And like, then a central air that has some kind of a viral filter.
Hopefully. But yeah, so it's like it's just it's this completely out of place luxury development that has been in the works since 2015. They've been taking up the whole entire sidewalk. It's an extremely busy sidewalk that goes to the train station, and it has been like inaccessible, like illegally so, for like at least a year. And they're just evil scumbags. Way before they did this, which is put up two signs on their scaffolding, one that says All Lives Matter and one that says Blue Lives Matter.
Oh, that's good. They yeah. kind of doubled down on being terrible.
Yeah, but it helped us bring a really good, like, important focal point to this development, because our tenants union, through our campaigns and like pressure, were able to stop a second similar development from happening a block away. They know what side is going to cater to them, and like they know that like they're never going to like win over the locals when they encroach these disgusting buildings into working class black and brown neighborhoods.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's exactly the point of their mission, is to fundamentally change the landscape of the city to the point where it's like, we don't really care where the locals go.
Yeah.
Because we've just decided we want to take over so that we can, you know.
Yeah. The tagline of this developer, AB Capstone, is literally, we build what we want. So it's just like, yep.
Yeah. And the amount of, you know, city infrastructure that is literally built by a mafia is kind of breathtaking as well.
Oh my God. I was just talking about this to a friend yesterday, that basically these real estate companies are like, yeah, are like the mafia. They're all just like different mafia groups.
Yeah, they are. They literally are. But you, of course, need a... you know, legitimate business on the outside to get all of these things done.
Mm-hmm. And you need the cops. Like, it's like, that's the era of New York that we live in now, is that it's like, it's still mob rule, but the cops are also mob.
It's like the '70s.
Yes. Yeah. It's ridiculous. The '70s. I've been, I just read the new piece that the Fear City author did. It's really good. I posted in the Art and Labor Discord, and she talks about all the different parallels that are happening to the '70s and now, and that like really probably the only way to salvage stuff as far as like New York City, the whole country, totally different discussion, is to find a way to tax the billionaires and multimillionaires that live in our state. But yeah, good luck, because Cuomo, you know, he went to the Hamptons. Huh. He asked them nicely. They said no. What you gonna do? Oh well.
Oh yeah. Speaking of the Hamptons,
you have a show in the Hamptons.
Yeah, if you all are listening to this, check out the East Hampton Shed. It is a space that is run by some dear friends who rule super hard and have been making art with like outsider artists and emerging artists for a long, long time now. And you know, you might hear about some other East Hampton galleries that are trying to like kind of corner the identity, like pretending that they're locals. They're not the locals. East Hampton Shed, those are the locals.
Anyway, yeah, I do feel for like the regular ass people.
Yes, yes. If you want to know what who are like the they're like the serious skin of their teeth, like build it all themselves, making awesome shows happen. East Hampton Shed. Find them on Instagram because right now they are going mobile. So, because of the pandemic and everything, they just made a little show space on wheels and they're going all around town. But right now, the show that I'm in is based off of, oh my God, why am I blanking on the name? Grey Gardens.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's all like the show is about being outside of the culture of people who displace locals and, you know, just sort of being
hanging on.
Yes. Just hanging on, on to the old world, the glory of the former years.
Or just like, you know, I because that lifestyle, I so appreciate just like hermit, like in all of your favorite things. Mm-hmm. And like,
of course, and a scarf on your head. Why not? You're encouraged to also dress Grey Gardens if you go to visit the show.
Oh my God, that's excellent.
Yes, it's very fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, something safe to do while you socially distance.
Oh, but yeah, to end off that we saw those banners, during our march a couple weeks ago. And then yesterday, we did like a rally under the banners. And it was really nice and really like, I think it was like a really good action, and meaningful. Like we had like alternative banners, that said, like, housing justice is racial justice, and Ridgewood supports Black Lives Matter. And then, like, we invited people to, like, write down, like, what do you envision for this space? What type of development could actually help people who are struggling and who live here? And so people, like, just wrote, like, all over the scaffolding with, like, chalk and stickers, like, their ideas and, like, their experiences and stuff like that.
Nice.
It was really good. And I would encourage, like, people to do similar actions on all these fucked up scaffoldings that are all over, like, and developments popping up all over these different neighborhoods. And that's, like, kind of, like, exactly what these different tenant unions all over the city are starting to do. And like, even just like having the writing on the walls there for people to walk by and see, like, oh shit.
And it is slightly rebellious, as you're not technically supposed to be writing on the green walls.
But it's chalk, so it comes off.
God, that's how you get around so it. Polite. You're so polite. It's crazy how polite this movement is.
I know. Well, so the thing is, like, our original thing was like, well, how do we fucking take down these banners? And it's like, well, so then we got some intel that the banners were almost certainly put up by the cops themselves as bait.
Huh. Nice.
Because there's cameras all over and shit. And like, you know, these developers and cops work directly together. Big real estate and cops work directly together, as we've established. And like, all they want is to kill two birds with one stone. All they want is to jail the opposition, you know? And they have a common opposition, like, in housing organizers, and, you know, anti-racist, anti-cop actions. And so if they could catch a protester doing something illegal and with like the insane surveillance state that has been set up all over the city, it sets an example, you know, to other protesters. And that's kind of like, I think, the tactic that the police are going with right now, is just like scaring enough people with
unmarked vans.
Yeah, with their unmarked vans and jailing them indefinitely and just fucked shit, illegal shit that they can get away with, because who's going to challenge them?
Yep. But in the meantime, you can draw some things with chalk on the walls with your buddies.
You can try to grow the movements as best we can. It's extremely difficult in a pandemic situation, of course, but there are safe ways to organize and, you know, might as well try.
Yeah, gonna say it one more time. Crowdsource a strike fund.
Yeah. People, I think, are starting to get there on like a national sort of level. I don't know if you've noticed the there's like this group that's popped up that like has a multi-step plan to have a third party by next election cycle, and then they're also like talking about like the proposition of a general strike over the post office.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, that sounds great, but I mean, you know, talk about a third party by next election cycle. I feel like the DSA is trying to kind of separate also from the Democrats.
Would love that.
Yeah. Well, that's what people are talking about in like the Emerge caucus.
Yeah, I've been following them a bit too. They're pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hopeful. I mean, yeah. You know, of course, all optimism, all eyes on the future.
Yeah, you can't dip into doomer brain. It'll hurt you.
Yeah, dude, don't doom. Dooming is for babies. Dooming is for people who think that they're not going to have to stick around and work through this.
It's true. I of course, like, sympathize with like the intense alienation people are going through. But there's a way to plug in. There's a way to do something that feels good and productive for you.
Yeah. I mean, definitely based, like, you know, there also just shouldn't be any judgment. I think if you're, more, catered, you know, if your life makes more sense focusing on one aspect of our crumbling infrastructure.
Totally.
Then just focus on that, and then don't worry if your friends are doing something different than you. Also, just like, I don't know, it's like what we're doing now.
Exactly.
If you've always been focusing on housing and I've been really interested in education, well, guess what? Both of those things are going to need support as our entire world falls apart. So just, you know,
seriously,
here it is, we're building the world all over again.
Talk about like alternative education models, like all of this shit is getting debated, like,
yes,
directly, like even the fucking principals union pushed back the school reopenings in New York, like,
which, thank God, because people were basically, you know, when you're at the point where your workers are writing wills because they're not sure if they're going to survive the work year, it's pretty good time to actually stop and think about what direction you're trying to push people in, because education is also one of those things that's not going to happen when so much bureaucracy steps into place. And when we're just trying to figure out, like the courses of, okay, we're going to have kids go for 3 hours at this time, but then 4 days a week, and then we're going to put everyone online at this point, and figuring out how to get everyone online when you have low income, like, families who are X amount of people living in a space where kids don't get the quiet they need to actually focus on anything in online learning. Like, every proposal that has been offered up to restart the new education year has been psychotic.
So bad.
And it's not to mention, after you have all of these kids actually go back to a school that has not been, it, this, the building has not been,
the building
retrofitted.
Has not been updated at
yeah,
all.
Exactly. So
even
you have
the 6 fucking months they had to do it. Like, the amount of air circulation that these, like, we get regular outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease in
exactly.
our public schools.
Well, only though in the Bronx, I think. So, you know, again, it's like, what are we dealing with here? It's going to be completely case by case, where we're going to hear news from the Times or whatever, like, oh, well, all of our Manhattan schools are doing just fine.
The Times is such a fucking racket, man. I get so pissed off.
It's awesome. I love I love it. I love getting my news late. And I love getting it bent.
Yes, I need that rose-colored glasses of like liberal incompetence.
Yeah, it's look, if we could all just learn to respect leadership better, I'm sure it'd be fine.
You gotta respect the hand that beats you.
Oh my god. Yeah, exactly. Because then it might take pity on you, or
that's the conservative mindset, right? I don't know.
No, the conservative mindset is like, if you get beat, it is good.
It's it's actually builds character.
You should just like it. If you don't, you have a problem.
Fuck, masochist.
Yeah. Also, you can only listen to classical music.
Wait, I have to plug this text conversation I was having with Kim last night, because we were just debating this actual subject.
Oh, bring it on.
Sorry.
What do you get? What do you get, Kimmy?
This will be quick. We were talking about it in terms of different Christian sects, but I think it applies to conservative and liberals too. we were saying,
sure,
that,
I mean, well, yeah, we do live in a religious ethno state, so
like it can. But we were talking about conservatives too, like, because like the Catholics have all the like freaky Eyes Wide Shut stuff. The Protestants like are kind of into like flagellation, guilt trip. I mean, they're both into guilt trip, flagellation stuff, I guess.
And well, the Protestants are into like, you should just be so in denial of earthly pleasure that you just get off on the pain.
Yes, BDSM. That's what Kim said, like something like that. And then,
but
like,
BDSM would be too much. It's
too
actually
much.
Like complete withdrawal. It's like if you were doing some kind of kinky stuff, people would be like, "I'm sorry, like we're just supposed to sit in wooden chairs."
And then we were saying that the Unitarians are kind of like the free love Christians.
Yeah, Unitarians. Yeah. What about Seventh-day Adventists?
I don't know anything about them, honestly.
They're, dude, wild cards.
Are they the Mormons? Are they the Mormons?
I don't know. Let me look.
Are they the Mormons? Or are they
Seventh-day Adventists? I guess I could have been looking.
Jehovah's. They're Jehovah's, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're Jehovah's, yeah.
No, they're Protestant.
Oh, they are? Okay. I don't know. I thought they were one of the ones that go door to door.
Yeah.
Well, so the conservative mindset I think is similar to like different Christian mindset, and it kind of like depends on their certain flavor. But then we were also talking about like adult Disney people and like how they're sort of like recovering Christians in a way.
Oh, there's so many recovering religious folks out there. Yeah. I mean, look at all the Marxists.
True.
Dude, the religiosity that gets passed around in leftist circles is like out of control. It's like nice. Like there's that weird utopian thing where all the leftists are like, look, I read Marx, and I read Marx all the time because Marx is my Bible. And then they go like, a better world is possible, and it's basically heaven,
right?
I was like, okay, but do we see that there's, like, what about, like, I thought that if you wanted to really do this thing, you have to be into material dialectics. Right. No, that's not it, dude. It's just we have to be into imagining the better world, and then we just rail.
But then they just imagine
fuss.
The 50s. Then they just imagine the 50s.
Yeah, the 50s, but everyone shares one kitchen.
Oh god, that, yeah, that's
for
too,
some reason
I think that's like two, yeah, that's a couple different sides, but there's, I'm definitely thinking of, there's like the kind of like conservative Marxists that are just like, if we go back to traditional gender roles or something,
oh my god,
like that shit.
Well, but it's like we have the potential to go back to traditional gender roles, because in the ideal world we will have 8 hours of work and 8 hours of being gendered. When we enjoy ourselves, we will do it. Dresses for the pink ones, and cars for the blue.
Oh God. That's how I imagine a better world, for sure. That's my
oh yeah. I mean, it's all about boundaries.
I don't know. I guess I'm like a I slip between a liberationist, like liberate everybody from gender, but then I sort of get like a fuck if they're happy, let them be the weird traditionalist as long as they're not abusing anyone. I don't know.
Oh yeah, well I think the idea with gender is just like, you know, and I think this is a kind of keystone for other liberation, but you know, you just can be a thing and you can change your mind.
I hope they change their minds, but I'm also like, I don't, yeah, I don't know.
But you can't, you just have the opportunity. You can. And other people can. Everyone is allowed to decide they don't want to be what they are.
Yeah.
They can change.
And it's, you can't allow, like, it, like people want to be like traditionalist or Christian, Marxist, whatever, but if they're going to be anti-trans, out of here, done with you.
Oh yeah, no.
Because it has to go both ways.
I just love all the people who are still on the tip of like, look, it's an economic issue. You know, it's not just like that trans is confusing to me. It's that,
oh my God.
It's that the it costs money.
It's yeah. Oh God. It's like, the market. It's the a market, and it's like, yeah, it's a market. It shouldn't fucking be a market. That's the whole point.
But also, everything's a market.
God. Ugh. Would love to undo markets. Show me how. Let's go.
Right. Look, we can't just go ahead letting people, you know, participate in things that exist. I mean, that would be crazy. It's just, look, stop it. We don't have enough of something, whatever we're missing. We don't have enough of it.
God damn.
Yeah. Logic. I don't know. I don't know about it.
To me, it sharpens the spear at who the targets are more. Like, when you clarify to people, like, yes, this should not be a market. Why is it a market? Who's not, you know, like who's hoarding all the wealth that makes it so that people can't live to the standards of, like, to, like, a good standard of living?
Oh, like, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what kind of circling back to our previous conversation was so interesting to me about, like, looking into the way the health, like, policy is made for SAG-AFTRA or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, so they're getting millions of dollars from employers to put into this program. And then the people who are paying like an amount of dues, whatever, they have some percentage. It's like 80% employers, 20% rank and file. And then it's like, well, all right, there's millions of dollars here. And then people are also paying on top of that. Right. So it's like their dues and these millions, and then they're also doing this like buy-in thing where if you get access to it, like you're still paying like a monthly thing on top of everything else. And then it's like, all right, this is racking up a ton of money here, guys. Like, why are we saying that things can't happen for people? And then it's just sort of like, the conversation that was being passed around on like some industry mags was like, oh, the deficit spending is a problem.
Fuck,
and I was like, are you kidding? Is this 90s America? I don't understand. We're still talking about deficit spending. Like, you guys have a surplus of funds that you can spend on people in the pandemic. What is the problem, actually?
Oh, they want to kill people. They're murderers, dude.
Yeah, it's wild.
They just want to kill people off so they have less people that they have to pay out. Like, it's awful.
I mean, this honestly does feel like a great reason for getting into the, you know, philosophical underpinnings of what we think, you know, like, what do we think people are and what do we think people deserve? And obviously as leftists, it's like, we deserve, you know, life, and it fucking should be simple, right? But for some reason now we're being poisoned by endgame theory.
Yeah.
People just believe that we need these restrictions so that the strong may pass into the uncertain future.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people, like we've talked about in previous recent episodes, like, the consciousness is there, but the organizational structures are lacking, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, but that's what I think, like, why we're having such a crisis of organization and why so many of these gestures of protest are finding themselves subsumed back into, like, you know, a capitalist response, right, is because we don't actually know how to combat this root issue of people kind of hardening against this, you know, new normalized field of death. Like, it's like a massive amount of death just occurring everywhere, and then people going like, yeah, but we matter. And it's like, well, no, of course, like, we matter to each other, but to people who are, like, already letting hundreds of thousands of our friends and family members die, none of us matter. So it's how do you organize against that?
No, the Black Lives Matter is like, it's like almost like a plea to people in power, like, please, we matter. Well, please stop killing us. But
it's a plea in the sense that all, like, liberal protests are a plea.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, a plea isn't a program that will make it true.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of like stated interest, stated intent, but on a large scale where it's completely necessary.
Well, the liberals are abstracting it because there are good organization happening, like, in spots, in different spots around the country on the ground, like, with really good demands. So I think a big hurdle is the, like, extremely like, tight-knit, like, liberal PR machine is part of why, like, these the areas of the protests that have developed demands and organization just, like, they don't
they don't get any play, and then we just get stuck with that classic line of people going, oh, these dang leftists, ever since Occupy Wall Street, they haven't been able to figure out what their demands are, and that's why nothing is working out. It's like, well, I don't know what,
like, you can
you're
point to a lot
to
of demands, like, you can actually, like,
there's tons of demands,
and
a lot of the demands
are consistent all around the country too, like, so if you have like a big pattern there, that's news.
No, exactly. But I mean, and this is why I'm saying, like, I don't know what we're supposed to even think about in terms of organization, except for that we all are more aligned than we think we are.
Yeah.
And we need to start maybe, like, letting that be true instead of sticking around in the information exchange, sort of Gen X, like, truth will set you free realm. It's like, come on, guys, we're doing this now. I don't know what that means, or if that means anything to anyone, because I'm trying not to be prescriptive. Like, right, we need to start the revolution. You know, what does that mean? But in terms of, like, asking power versus taking power, I guess I'm maybe thinking about that transition.
Yeah. I wish that instead of, like, allowing the liberals to win the abstraction war, we just, like, treated the Black Lives Matter protests as a vanguard, you know,
Well, some people were trying.
Yeah. And people were trying for sure.
Yeah. And that's the issue, is that we try to focus on messaging, like as if we could reach a critical mass of understanding, like this is the vanguard and this is what we all need to rally around. And it's like, well, you know, most changes happen with a pretty small group that is focused and is like finding a way to get directly to the people that they want to challenge. So maybe it's not about, you know, building out this horizontality and trying to get everyone to have the same Twitter takes. Maybe it's about allowing a space for some specialized individuals to, you know.
Yeah, you're finding a dialectic, I think, that between those two poles that I think is probably... I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to get too prescriptive either, but
yeah, because it's like everything needs to happen.
Yeah,
there needs to be protests.
Yeah.
There needs to be, like, you know, pussy hat protests, but there also needs to be Black Lives Matter protests. Everyone needs to express their, you know, their political voice, and that's, I'm not axing that, but within this frame, if we look at the history of how all regimes of power change, it's usually due to a concerted effort from a smaller group of people who make a strategy.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, there are some really, I think if people want to get into tenant organizing, I would encourage them to, I think there is a really interesting pattern developing in
New
York City right now.
Fight back against the developers.
Because if you think about it, like, New York City is like the way it used to function, like the capacity that New York used to function at and the level of consumption that New York used to function at is not coming back for the foreseeable future. So it's like, do the luxury wealthy people even want these fucking developments?
Right.
Can they even use them anymore?
Exactly. What is this for at all? Except for the developers themselves.
Yes. And so it's like, if you get to a point where it's like, I don't know, if you can get enough like lefty people involved in city planning, you could maybe get the fucking city to take over these developments and actually give the public housing that we desperately need.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know that there are some people working on eminent domain in the city that is just like, you know, taking over spaces and actually housing people either in like affordable housing or housing the homeless.
It's been a long standing demand of the Brooklyn Gentrification Network, probably since 2012 or so, is that the city owns a lot of property and that they're just sitting on a lot of the time. And sometimes the city will just like give like a, they'll pull like a Kamala Harris and just give that property to like enterprising white people to whatever with. And that's kind of all they'll do with it. Otherwise it sits there forever in hell, in like logistics hell or whatever. That all needs to be public housing.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Just buy it back and give it to people. Simple. Yeah.
Simple.
So simple. It's just paperwork.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. And the paperwork that they're doing for the white or wealthy, not always white. Sometimes there's like an identity politic to it where it's like, you know, we're looking for people with deep neighborhood roots to develop this project, you know, or like they'll put a library in it, literally we'll put a library in it or whatever the hell. To confuse the issue. I don't think they can keep pulling that off in the New York COVID economy.
Nope. But we'll see, you know, as all the gears keep grinding.
True. Yeah. You gotta stay vigilant, and you know, have fun out there, everyone.
Yeah, come on, let's have fun.
Bye.
I care if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't matter if you
fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun. Let's have fun.